using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Tuesday, the 8th of June, year of our Lord 2021, day 451 of America Held Hostage. Today our guest is Alex Lazarev, and you may remember, I guess it was about a month ago, he was bullhorning people with satire about the COVID lockdowns, the masks, and other issues, and a guy took out the window of his car with a bicycle. In a totalitarian society, humor is not allowed, so we're going to have some humor today. Stay with us. We have a lot of breaking news this morning. Of course, you may have noticed that there were major outages on the internet. New York Times, CNN, Twitch, Reddit, The Guardian, the UK government's homepage could not be reached this morning. Why was that? Well, it appears that they had all used a particular cloud service of a company called Fastly. And the purpose of Fastly was to route the information more fastly. But they vastly underestimated the danger of centralization. And so as it failed, you would see this morning, if you went to CNN.com, the error message, Fastly error, unknown domain name, CNN.com. After that momentary moment of joy, you realize that, sorry, it's not... CNN is still there, and they're now back up, as well as some of the Amazon services, which is kind of interesting, since Amazon uses the cloud service company for a lot of government agencies, the CIA among them. They had the big dispute that is ongoing over the JEDI project. That was a project to centralize everything in the Pentagon onto one cloud server run by Amazon. And of course, that was put out as a contract. People who looked at it said, it looks like this request for proposal was written specifically with Amazon in mind. And yes, I believe it was. General Mattis, Mad Dog Mattis, the guy that, you know, we're not supposed to criticize Mattis because Trump likes him until, just like in a totalitarian society, as soon as Trump turned on Mattis, then everybody in the MAGA cult turned on Mattis as well. And he got his 15 minutes of hate, just like Orwell imagined. But I wasn't a big Mattis fan from the very beginning. And when I found out what was going on with the JEDI project and the fact that he, but especially person who is very close to him, number two, a woman in her 30s, can't remember her name now, but she was making regular trips to Amazon's headquarters out in Seattle, and they then came up with this proposal. So it looked like it was an inside job. It's about a $10 billion proposal. Trump did not like Jeff Bezos and Amazon, so they managed somehow to give the contract to Microsoft. Not that they're any better, I guess, but maybe there is something there behind the scenes with Trump and Microsoft when you look at Operation Warp Speed and the JEDI project. I don't know. But Amazon is appealing that decision and challenging it. But it was not only Amazon and CNN, but it was also my favorite payment service, PayPal. That won't allow me to get any money passed through. They were also down. So sorry to see CNN and PayPal down this morning. But it is a lesson and the dangers of centralization. And I believe that as we move forward, it's whether or not I think this particular thing was not engineered by anybody, but I think we're going to see more and more issues of failing infrastructure, especially on the internet, because that's what Davos and the globalists want. That's what they're training for. That is their next big hit, as they get everybody focused more and more onto the internet and away from each other, away from reality and into virtual reality. Then they will control that virtual reality. The company Fastly only went public in 2019. The idea was to help websites move content using less congested routes to get to the consumers faster, or as they would say, more fastly. So that did not happen. The other news that has been going on, of course, we've had the back and forth of the G7, and they were saying that they had come up with an agreement to set global tax rates for corporations of certain sizes to make sure they paid a minimum tax of 15%, and they wanted to make sure that was going to be across the board, because when you have different tax rates in different countries, Ireland famously exploited this by lowering their tax rate and getting a lot of jobs moved to their country. You would think that they would all start competing with each other on that. As a matter of fact, you know, you might go back and look at the plan that Thomas Jefferson had. It's the antithesis of globalism. What he did was he had a government that was small enough that it could fit in the Constitution, and all of the taxes internally were removed by Jefferson, our third president. And he talked about it in his second inaugural address. He said, we've removed useless offices, and as a result, we've been able to eliminate all internal taxation. So the only taxes that were there were on goods that were transversing the border. What that allowed them to do was to create an economy in the United States that was self-reliant and vibrant. So you had no internal taxes. When the globalists got power, they decided they would do exactly the opposite. They created a central bank, Federal Reserve, and at the same time, they created an income tax. And then they tried to lower as much as possible the tariffs. That's always been their strategy. Their strategy has been to take tariffs to zero and the income tax to the max. Now, the problem with the G7, and all of us look at the story about Elon Musk that came out. Gizmodo says this morning that Elon Musk paid $0 in federal income tax in 2018. And I would suggest that you not take the bait for envy. I don't like the fact that he is getting so much money, so much subsidies. As a matter of fact, that's where he gets most of his money, is from federal subsidies. That should be stopped. But don't take this bait and say, therefore, we need to jump in and support the G7's agreement that they would have a minimum rate of 15% for the uber wealthy. Because understand, we have Republicans who are pushing back against that. That looks like that agreement may not go through, because Republicans are pushing back on that. This is, at one level, it may be just that they are paying off their masters, their contributors. But understand how dangerous it is to have a general agreement on global tax rates. Once you start setting tax rates globally, it's a short step from there to a global tax. And a global tax has always been the foundation of the environmental alarmism, which has been tied for the longest time to the Great Reset and what we're now currently experiencing. They want a global government. If you have a global government, in order to fund that global government, you're going to have a global tax. And so they want to make a global carbon tax. And this is the game that billionaires like Elon Musk are playing when they get their subsidies. They're playing this greenwashing game, and that's what it is. But it's also watermelon environmentalism. It is completely red, completely Marxist, with a thin veneer of green, just like a watermelon. And so, yeah, he paid zero federal income taxes. So why don't we use that to cut the subsidies? As a matter of fact, we shouldn't be bribing people to buy one type of vehicle or car or power source. We should not be subsidizing and picking the winners and losers, whether it is the electrical grid itself or cars and how they're going to be run. There's absolutely no reason why all cars have to be battery-operated electrical. We understand that you can make a very clean diesel gasoline engine, that the earth is not melting down, and you can even have electric cars that run off of hydrogen, if you wish. And the reason that they're pushing for battery-operated cars is simply because they can then make the argument that, unlike all these other alternatives, gasoline, diesel, hydrogen, they don't have a point at which you get your fuel. And so they have to tax you by the mile, which means that they have to put a black box in the car to monitor everywhere you drive, how much you drive, and the way that you drive, and tax you accordingly. And it's just another one of these control structures, just like the vaccine and the vaccine passport is the reason that they're doing this. When we look at censorship, we have Twitter censoring the Nigerian president, the Nigerian president then censoring Twitter, and then Twitter crying about censorship. That's a great headline. InformationLiberation.com, Chris Minahan. As he points out, Twitter is working together with the State Department to overthrow the democratically elected president of Nigeria the same way they worked to overthrow the president of the United States. And understand that it's not just the censorship, but it's also the interference in elections. Trump supported, in principle, the idea that corporations should be able to censor people. That even though they are the digital public square, and even though we have had the Supreme Court weigh in 1946, Marsh versus Alabama, that if the public square is privately owned, in that particular case, it was a company town, coal town. They didn't like somebody handing out religious tracts in the public square, so they kicked her out. She took them all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that's an absolute right. And if it's the public square, even if you own the public square, you don't get to control it that way. Well, Twitter and Jack Dorsey have said over and over again that Twitter, under oath in congressional testimony, have said that Twitter is the digital public square. That should be the end of the story. That's exactly what this is. As I said many times, their business model is not the same. Some people will come back in and say, yeah, but in subsequent years, we had decisions about shopping malls and things like that. The shopping mall is not the public square. The shopping mall is a retail space. And even that common area where people are walking is still retail space. You have kiosks that are there. And it makes no more sense for people to think they have a public right to speak in that area that does if they were to set up a soapbox in the middle of Sears. Remember when we had Sears? I'm losing my cultural references because all of our brick-and-mortar retailers are gone. I can't think of any that still exists to give a more current example. But you're not allowed to set up inside a store. So, as Chris Minahan points out, the big difference between Trump and the president of Nigeria is the president of Nigeria is actually fighting back rather than choosing to, quote-unquote, monitor the situation. So on Wednesday, Twitter censored the Nigerian president Buhari's tweet, warning separatists and insurrectionists who have been killing the police and attacking Nigerian infrastructure that they're going to be dealt with, quote, in the language they understand. This is what he tweeted, many of those misbehaving today are too young to be aware of the destruction and the loss of lives that occurred during the Biafra War. Those of us in the fields for 30 months who went through the war will treat them with the language that they understand. And so Twitter censored that. And then after they were censored by him, that Twitter said, we are deeply concerned by the blocking of Twitter in Nigeria. Access to the free and open internet is an essential human right in modern society. How's that for hypocrisy? Well, the reality is that they've interfered with our election, just as all the rest of the big tech companies have. The State Department did nothing. Trump did nothing. As a matter of fact, he did at one point in time put out an executive order telling the people who run elections that they needed to do something, and the career bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. just ignored that, just ignored it, as RT points out. He had talked about how Facebook, Twitter, YouTube were pushing the election in favor of Biden. He put out an executive order, and they just said, well, we don't care. We really don't care. So that's where we are today. As a matter of fact, Julian Assange's family began a tour this weekend, 17-city U.S. tour. His father and his brother a tour that's going to last for a month, making appearances in various, again, 17 cities, mostly on the coast, but there's a few in the Midwest. as his brother pointed out in a statement, he said, "My brother Julian Assange has effectively been a prisoner for over a decade because he published evidence of war crimes. The U.S. government wants to make an example out of him to deter journalists and whistleblowers." Julian Assange is where this began. And let me tell you where it ends. It ends with all journalists and whistleblowers being treated like him, like he's being treated now. They began with deplatforming. They began with censoring. They began with bogus charges. And it is ending with his imprisonment and his torture to kill him. This is what our society has turned into. And you should be very concerned about that. That's why it's very important. We're going to have later in the program, coming up in the second hour, we're going to have Alex Lazarev. You might have seen the viral video where he was, and of course he does, he and some of his friends dress up like zombies, and they wear the mask, and he was actually sarcastically congratulating people on how obedient they were and how they were wearing the mask. And it got one guy so outraged that he picked up his bicycle and smashed the window, started yelling at him. He rolled up his window and he banged the window and it completely shattered it. And so we're going to talk to him about that today, because let me tell you, the one thing, the reason the guy got so upset is because you can't handle ridicule, especially if you have a totalitarian mindset. One of the things that was always a characteristic growing up when we looked at totalitarian societies like Russia, Soviet Russia, was the humorlessness of it all. You can't make jokes when you have a Marxist regime. It is not political correctness. It is Marxism. It's all it is. It's just Marxism. And now as Marxism has come to America, oh, you call it political correctness, and you've got a lot of comedians like John Cleese who have opposed it, but still doesn't understand what it is because he's so leftist in his orientation. He said, "We were just trying to be nice to people. This is how this all started, and now this has become a real tyranny, and you can't make any jokes about anything." And these people are saying, that's right, you can't make any jokes about anything. It is a complete tyranny of the mind. And so, as I've said many times, if you want to know how we fight back against this, look at what they're telling us not to do and do it. If they don't want you to meet in person, if they don't want you to have friends and family, if they don't want you to be outside without a mask, if they don't want you to go to church, do all those things. And if they don't want you to have fun and make jokes, do all those things especially. So have fun, live your life, be a normal human being, and just in living your life, you shut down these people who demand to control every aspect of your life and everything that you think. You know, the FBI, amazingly, we're talking about journalism and we're talking about censorship. The FBI, as you probably saw over the weekend, demanded from USA Today that they turn over records showing everybody who looked at a February story talking about two FBI agents who were killed. They went to do a raid on a guy that they said had kiddie porn. And he confronted the agents and shot several of them and killed two of the FBI agents. And so the FBI wanted USA to turn over all the information about the IP addresses, computers, and everything else that they had on these people that had visited the USA Today site within a 35-minute window. The problem is that I guess they figured, since USA Today is usually on board in terms of selling every agenda that the federal government has, that they would be compliant and submit to that. To their surprise, they didn't. And let me tell you what this is really about. As I was saying yesterday, if you look at the agenda, C2PA, that is ultimately where they want to go with this. Once they stage, they're training now with a cyber polygon about what happens when we have a big attack on the infrastructure. And you're seeing these highly publicized attacks on the infrastructure. Of course, exacerbated by the centralized control and interference that has been put in by the lockdown. But what they ultimately want to do is the same thing that the Soviets did. And that is to identify content, any content that anybody puts out, whether it is a written document, whether it is an audio file, a video file, even a meme. They want to identify you. That's very much what the FBI just did, including IP addresses on all computers and all electronic devices that went to this particular place. This is where these people want to go. And who did they pick to run all this? Microsoft. Microsoft is at the center of an alliance between hardware manufacturers, CPU producers, specifically Intel and ARM, between hardware and software, that'd be Adobe and other software content creators, and with news organizations. And at the center of all of it is Microsoft as the front organization, again, for the government surveillance, domestic surveillance. And what they want to do is attach an ID, mark every document that is created with a user-specific ID so they can tell where it comes from. We've seen this before in the Soviet Union. Soviet Union, before they released manual typewriters, each typewriter has a very specific signature based on variations in how they're made. And so they studied that very carefully because they were worried about people criticizing them. Because, again, they're Marxists. They can't take any humorless Marxists who try to control your speech and your thoughts, which is where we are today. And so before they would let a typewriter go out, they would identify it, characterize it, and then when they found writing that they didn't like, they would take it back and compare it forensically until they could determine which typewriter it came from and tie that to who owned it. That's what Microsoft is doing. Microsoft is doing a high-tech version of that brute force, Soviet-style control. It didn't stop Solzhenitsyn and a lot of intellectuals from writing samizdat, which is the general label that they used for protest literature. They still did it. But of course, they paid the price by going to jail. So the FBI backed off after there was a lot of outcry over this weekend. And as Reason puts it, disturbingly, the FBI doesn't seem to think that it did anything wrong. The FBI didn't withdraw the subpoena because it was a clear violation of the U.S. Constitution, but because the person it sought to find through the subpoenaed reader records was identified through other means. And as Reason correctly points out, that makes the FBI's move even more shocking. Authorities clearly had other ways to find the suspect that they were looking for, and apparently still decided to infringe on freedom of the press, and that was a good first step. Under the Trump administration, the Department of Justice obtained the phone records of reporters from CNN, the New York Times, and the Washington Post. When this was revealed, President Biden says, "This is simply wrong." Yet now that he is in office, Biden is doing the same thing. Surprise, isn't it? When you look at the government's central agenda and what they hope to accomplish, it never changes. Whether you have Trump in or you have Biden in, it doesn't change with a vaccine. It doesn't change with the mandate to run the vaccines, to mandate the vaccines through corporate coercion. That doesn't change. It's just now they have a different salesman because a lot of people would not take it from Trump. If it's a Trump vaccine, well, I'm not taking the Trump vaccine. But now they can call it the Biden vaccine and get people to take it. So as Reason points out, unfortunately, after Biden became president, he said that was simply wrong to do that. The Biden Justice Department not only allowed these disturbing intrusions to continue, but it intensified the government's attack in the same way that he's done the same with Trump's intrusions on our lives with lockdown. As a matter of fact, politics really does make strange bedfellows, doesn't it? We see the Biden Justice Department has now defended Trump in a lawsuit over rape. This is the case of E. Jean Carroll. And I'm not weighing into this one way or the other. It's just that I think a lot of people on the left, especially the never Trump derangement syndrome types, heads are going to be spinning with this because, you know, it obviously had to be true because it was Trump. And now Biden is defending Trump. It is truly shocking that the current Department of Justice would allow Donald Trump to get away with lying about it, thereby depriving our client of her day in court, wrote her lawyer. But it is a club. And, of course, you ain't in it, as George Carlin pointed out. Hunter Biden was hired by a Romanian tycoon to help overturn his bribery conviction. Because, look, if you are convicted of bribery, who better than Hunter Biden? He is an expert on bribery and how to get away with it. So it was actually a pretty smart move by the Romanian real estate tycoon, Gabriel Popoviciu. He was convicted in his home country in 2016 of bribery. He had bribed a university official to buy a 550-acre plot of government-owned land at a drastically reduced price because it was the university, I guess, and then got it. He hired Hunter Biden that year, 2016, as part of an influence campaign to persuade anti-corruption prosecutors to cut a deal or to drop the case. And Hunter, knowing how you get these things done, brought in Louis Freeh, the former director of the FBI, those good guys who are just telling the USA Today people, oh, turn over all the names of everybody who visited your site with that particular article within a 35-minute window. So Louis Freeh, former director of the FBI, was brought in to use his connections to get this guy off. But it's not just Biden. It's not just Trump, of course. It's the Bush people. The Bush Foundation, we now find, is bankrolled by a Chinese Communist Party-linked firm. This is the China-United States Exchange Foundation, CUSEF, which has been identified back in 2018 by both Democrats and Republicans, the Democrat in Texas, Henry Cuellar, and the Republican, Mike McCall in Texas, wrote to Texas University presidents warning of CUSEF's influence on campuses in the state, noting that the firm's intentions are to spread China's political agenda, suppress academic debate, and steal vital academic research. And so, if they want to do something like that, just like the smart guy in another country who's convicted of bribery, he gets Hunter Biden or politicians on his side. In this particular case, they got Neil Bush and the Bush Foundation, a $5 million grant from this Chinese front organization. And, of course, they also paid off, wait for it, Johns Hopkins University was paid off by the Chinese. The Chinese bankrolled a new endowed professorship in Chinese Studies Department, as well as a new research project called the Pacific Community Initiative, reported Foreign Policy. And when we look at President Trump and his imminent reinstatement as president in August, the Babylon Bee points out that he's got 10 things on his agenda. Number one, let's redrain the swamp. Number four, I'll just skip through some of these because we need to take a break here. Sign an executive order bringing back Aunt Jemima, Mr. Potato Head, and Uncle Ben. Wow, promises made, promises kept. Lock up Hillary, but this time for real. Build 500 new pipelines, making gas plummet to a dime a gallon. Number nine, make America great again, again. And number 10, wipe away every tear. Make the lion lie down with the lamb. Because this is the, we're talking about the Messiah of the MAGA movement. We'll be right back.
The common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, on this day 451, we're going to take a look at what is happening. We've got an update on the trial in Canada of Pastor James Coates. Before we get back into the news, however, I just want to say thank you to the listeners who have an this was there was no name on the box. We had a listener send us a pet toy, which Scout really loves. He's already removed the ear off of one side, as you can see. That's a testimony to how much he loves it. And this, Vetrison, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, an antimicrobial wound and skin care. Thank you so much for all the treatments that everyone has sent. And it is still touch and go with him. We have so many different pieces of advice, whether we keep the wound open or whether we close it up. And we're trying both. And a little bit to kind of monitor him. Yesterday, we kept the bandage off a little bit, but then it started to get inflamed, and he started to feel more pain. So I think we're going to keep it wrapped up at this point. But thank you so much for that. As a matter of fact, there's two bottles of this, and I really do appreciate all the help, and we will keep you posted as to what is happening with him. Let's get to day 451. We had yesterday, they'd had a trial of Pastor James Coates for a couple of days. I think it was the end of May, if I remember correctly. And the judge thought about the arguments and then came back for his decision yesterday. And before we tell you what the decision was, in a live blog of what was happening there, you had on Rebel News, they said, well, the court has posted the wrong video link twice for the Coates trial. They're approaching a one-hour delay. It was actually an hour and 15 minutes late starting. As I pointed out, the mass confusion and limiting of journalists and observers to the Coates hearing to only audio, coupled with the musical chairs of rotating video links, are all because the Crown prosecutor did not want anybody to know her name or see her face. Isn't that amazing? When you're that ashamed of what you do, and she should be ashamed. The government should be ashamed. The judge should be ashamed. Because what the judge ultimately ruled was that there was no violation of charter rights. Now, as the, and I talked to, not to John Carpe, the president of the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms in Canada, but to the guy who works with him, James Kitchen. And as James Kitchen was explaining it, and as John Carpe explained it in his notes, it's clearly an obvious violation of charter freedoms. There's absolutely no way that the judge should have been able to rule that way. It's a clear, complete ignoring of the written text to do that. The question would be, and so from this stage, the judge just completely ignored the law, disregarded it in its entirety. Because at this point, he should have ruled that it was a violation of charter freedoms. The next step should have been to see if the violation was warranted, because it is a two-step process. As James Kitchen was pointing out, he said, there is, unlike our First Amendment, there is no exception for free speech or for the free exercise of religion or for the showing up in public and protesting the government. There are no exceptions for that, period. In Canada, however, there is an exception if it is warranted. If it is warranted, they can suspend these basic freedoms. And so it's clear from the text and from what they did that they took away these freedoms. So the next step should have been, he should have ruled this way and then said, okay, so is it justified what they did? But the judge short-circuited that. So the next step is going to be an appeal. As John Carpe, president of the Justice Center, said, it is obvious that government restrictions on people's freedom to worship, assemble, and associate are violated by health orders that prevent normal, regular church services from taking place. Whether the instructions are reasonable should only be considered later, after the government has finally produced medical and scientific evidence to try to justify its restrictions on our charter freedoms. Again, the Charter of Canada, fundamental document just like our Constitution, Bill of Rights. An appeal of this decision is being considered based on serious errors in law. As LifeSite News points out, while acknowledging the sincerity of Pastor Coates' religious convictions, quote-unquote, the judge decided that the pastor's charter right to freedom of religion had to, quote, be reasonably threatened in more than an insubstantial way, and then only after competing interests are weighed. So They argued that his public freedom, that his rights and his freedoms have been violated, that the court should throw out the Public Health Act charge. But they dismissed this, and as the Justice Center is saying, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms requires governments to justify demonstrably with compelling evidence any law, policy, or health order that violates our fundamental freedoms to move, travel, associate, worship, assemble, or express ourselves. I mean, this is everything, not just the churches, but everything. This very basic constitutional requirement has been ignored completely by government at every level for the past 15 months. Unfortunately, the courts have permitted the government to delay facing accountability in regard to charter violations. He goes on to say, the government has now had 15 months to assemble proper medical and scientific evidence to justify the lockdowns. Yet the government cannot or will not put that evidence before the court. Why is that? Well, same thing we see from our government, isn't it? It's secret. You're not allowed to know. And we have seen this forever with environmentalism. I've pointed out, I'm not going to go into detail, but I was part of a group that was trying to wrest the data that was used for the conclusions of Michael Mann, the guy who created that hockey stick nonsense for Al Gore that he used so much in his Inconvenient Truth documentary, The Convenient Lie, and we'd like to see your data. They wouldn't do it. And they had a court said they don't have to show it. It's like, what are you talking about? He's published the research. It's been used for public policy. It was paid for by the public at a public university. Now it's being used for public policy. It's been published. No, we're not going to let you see it. Same thing is happening now. When the government wants to hide its data and it starts parading around people with titles and positions, talking about science this and science that, but they won't show you the data, you know what is happening here. This is political science. It's called dictatorship. The government cannot or will not put that evidence before the courts, but somehow the Alberta government would have us believe that it has enough medical and scientific evidence to shut down hundreds of small businesses, pushing many of them into bankruptcy, and to cancel over 20,000 medically necessary surgeries, and to force Albertans into a third lockdown as of yesterday. In case you think this is just happening in Canada or in Australia, as we saw yesterday, actually we didn't see it. I related the video to you. I didn't play the video for you. But in Australia, you had a pastor who said, I'm done with this. We're going to go back. We're going to meet in church. So they arrested him. And the people then met outdoors in a park. And they sent an army of cops in, wearing masks and all the rest of this stuff to tackle these people who were not getting sick and haven't been. There's no reason for it. And in Melbourne, they have locked down a city of several million because they claim they have 52 cases based on PCR tests, not even symptomatic. So locked down a city of several million. And in the video, you see one female cop, that one. And they go out and tackle and choke a man on the ground simply because he has the audacity to show up for an outdoor worship service. So that's just Australia, right? That's just Canada. We don't have to worry about that happening in America, do we? Well, yeah. In Baltimore, the police and church officials had came very close to having that happen. And as this whole thing was breaking last year, March or April, there was a black church in downtown Baltimore, and the rule at that point in time was no more than 10 people getting together. And this black pastor was in his 70s, and they met with seven people, I think, and then three security guards because it's an area of very, very high crime. And the police showed up with four police cars, eight cops outnumbering the worshipers, to try to bust them. And they said, but we're not violating any rules here. We've only got seven elderly black people meeting in church. And I pointed out at the time, I said, you want to know why you got drive-by shootings and all the kind of violence that's happening in Baltimore? Because they don't have any more than seven elderly people meeting in a church. And the pastor was just incredulous. He said, this looks like a drug raid. we're not doing anything wrong. Why don't you go out? We got rampant crime in the streets, but they focus on the church with the seven elderly black people. And so now they have a church with 1,500 people, a Greater Grace World Outreach Church, Northeast Baltimore. For 2 weeks, they continued to hold services back this March without requiring masks or social distancing. Before they agreed to follow the city's guidelines, they were intimidated. Here's what happened. Body camera footage. You can see the back and forth between the church and the city. When they approached the church that day, health and law enforcement officials were met by an armed security guard clad in black bulletproof vest emblazoned with the word police in bright yellow letters. As they attempted to enter the building, the guard blocked the doorway. He says, "I just want you to wait for my supervisor," said the church guard. "Can you folks please wait a second? Do you have a search warrant?" "We don't need a search warrant," said the cops. "This is the health department. This is the housing department." It's like the Treasure Sierra Madre. "Badges? We don't need no stinking badges. We are the federales, right?" "They have every right," they said, "to go into your business." See, the health department, housing department, they're bureaucracies. They're above the law. They make the rules. They don't follow any laws. They make the rules. "They have every right to go into your business. Please step aside." The church's chief of operations asked them to... came outside to confront them, and they asked him to clear the building. He says, "I'm not going to do that. We've got a message going on. We're worshiping God in there." That began a tense confrontation that went on for about a half hour, so I'm not showing you the video. Slowly fizzled out as the police who arrived on the scene decided against forcing an evacuation. So the initial guys are there. They call in reinforcements. They get a large number of people, and they're going to try to forcefully evacuate 1,500 people from church. Let me tell you, even though these people are Christians, and even though these guys are armed with tasers and billy clubs and body armor and guns and the rest of this stuff, they may have been worried that if they start attacking people, these 1,500 people are going to turn on them. That's the power of numbers. That's our people. We the people have power, power in numbers. And these people, as you saw with the January the 6th situation, it was just a few people who overwhelmed the cops that were there. These people are ruling because we allow them to rule. We don't have to get violent with them. We just have to ignore them. And if there's enough of us, they will back off. It's just like the only rallies that I've been to that ended without any kind of police confrontation were rallies where people were armed. And they just kind of chill out at that point in time. So you have a lot of people, or you have people who are armed, and the police stay in their lane. Otherwise, they don't. That's just the way it is. Rule of law? Meh. After war officers arrived, a consensus emerged. They said, "There's obviously a lot going on nationwide, and I won't even pretend to understand the legalities of all of it," said a lieutenant. "But I don't think anybody knows the legalities of it." See? He admits, "Well, is this legal? I don't know. Badges? I don't know. Laws? Do we have any of this stuff?" But he says, "I don't think anybody knows the legalities of it. I think it's something that we're crossing as a bridge. So we're not going to forcibly remove hundreds of churchgoers," he said later. We have in Florida a victory for sanity, a victory for DeSantis. Royal Caribbean Cruise Line has now changed its mind, and they are not going to require vaccinations for passengers. Why? Was it the power of persuasion from DeSantis? Was it reason? Was it logic? Was it science? Was it data? No. Because we're not at the point anymore where you can show anything else to these people. They're totally unreasonable. They're not persuaded by facts. They are not following science. They're following pronouncements. That is not the scientific method. No. DeSantis said, "I will fine you if you require vaccination passports." Oh, okay. I get it. Let's talk about the vaccine. Heart reactions, I was going to talk about this yesterday, so that's why I want to get to this while I still have time, and other things got in the way. Heart reaction is probed as a possible rare vaccine link in teens, is it? Yeah. Well, I guess if it happens to kill your child, as one 17-year-old boy died at the beginning of all this, same way, had no heart issues. You notice how they completely avoid that case? They don't like to talk about that. Well, we've had a lot of guys who wound up in the hospital with myocarditis, inflammation of the heart, but we were able to pull them out of it. They were kind of touch and go for a while, but, you know, nobody's died. Well, yes, they have died. And again, you saw the picture of this one kid who was who had the heart inflammation, and they had him in the hospital, and they put a mask on him, a mask on him. When you have a heart issue, they usually give you oxygen, but because the incentivized, financially incentivized malpractice that we're living under, they put a mask on people. And so as AP wants you to think this is a rare side effect, they do announce boys aged 14 to 19 who received the Pfizer shots in April or May developed chest pain within a few days. Heart imaging tests showed a type of heart muscle inflammation called myocarditis. None were critically ill. No, they lied to you that at least one of them die. All were healthy enough to be sent home after up to 6 days in the hospital, and they're doing pretty well. But that's AP lying to you. Then you have Dr. Rochelle Walensky at the CDC, concerned and urging parents, even though you've got kids who have zero risk in this age group of having any serious side effects of COVID at all. Most of the time, they're even asymptomatic. They have zero risk from the virus, but they have non-zero risk of myocarditis. If it is not caught in time, you will die like that one young man at the beginning. And yet, we got to get the kids vaccinated. Parents, we got to get the kids vaccinated. Vaccination is our way out of this pandemic. No, it is child sacrifice. This is coming from people who have no problem sacrificing children on the altar of fake prosperity, or sacrificing children to their arbitrary herd immunity numbers. And it's one way that they can get up their efficacy. Because think about this. We've already been told that the vaccine is 100% effective for teens. Well, they weren't getting the disease anyway. So, of course, it's going to look 100% effective. So they can bump up the other numbers with that. And they continue to say that there is no causal relationship between vaccine administration and myocarditis that's been established. Oh, yes, it has. Again, a blatant lie. But we urge physicians and healthcare providers to consider myocarditis in the evaluation of adolescents and young adults who develop chest pain after the COVID-19 vaccination. Do you see how obvious this is? This is like Soviet propaganda. Well, there's nothing at all to see here. It's a complete coincidence. But you should take a look at that as a possibility if somebody comes in with chest pains. But there's no connection whatsoever. It's just, if it's a coincidence, why would you look for it? Why would you expect it? Israel's Ministry of Health reported a link between Pfizer and heart inflammation. And but it's just a coincidence theory. And here's another coincidence. COVID hospitalizations and deaths for the vaccinated more than triple in 1 month, according to the CDC. You know, when they said that this was a breakthrough, literally, it's a breakthrough. Yeah, breakthrough is a euphemism for their failure. When their vaccine doesn't work, they call it a breakthrough infection. It is just so rare. Well, actually, it's not. But we've seen them play with these numbers before. You know, maybe when they first came out, 90% effective. Next day, Pfizer said, ours is 93% effective. The next week, you had Moderna come out. We're 94.5% effective. And then Pfizer said, we're 95% effective the very next day. And now that they're giving it to teens who have absolutely no risk, they're saying that's 100% effective. So about 10% of the patients who became ill after the vaccination before April 30th were hospitalized. And the agency said it had received reports of 160 fully vaccinated patients dying from COVID. Because why? Because they're injecting you with the part of this virus that causes the damage, the spike. Just days later, the CDC website reported 3,016 patients fully vaccinated had developed infections and had been hospitalized or died. And so when we look at this, understand that at the same time, this is when they changed the way they would count COVID cases. So it's actually even worse than this. Because, as I pointed out before, they changed the cycle threshold magnification. So they're looking for people who are not vaccinated. They're magnifying the viral debris by 4,000 times more than they are for those who are vaccinated. So they don't look quite so hard for people who are vaccinated. Furthermore, even if they you tested positive, if you are not at that lower rate, that much lower, that 4,000 times lower rate, even if you test positive there, they still don't count it unless you're hospitalized or die and have that test. You see how they rigged the data? Pennsylvania immunologist Human Norcasm says, critically, in persons who have recent infections, vaccination could reignite a critical inflammatory disease or blood clotting complications that are proven deadly. He also said, as the FDA and the CDC came out and said, we don't want you tested for antibodies after you've recovered now or after you've had the vaccination, especially not after the vaccination. Why wouldn't you do that? Wouldn't you want to know if your vaccine had worked? Antibody tests should not be used at this time to determine immunity or protection against COVID-19 at any time, especially after a person has received a vaccination, quote-unquote, said the CDC. Again, immunologist Norcasm said, this is shocking. Why shouldn't Americans check their blood after vaccination to make sure they've mounted a response? It's shocking. What do you think they are worried about finding in the blood? Abnormal platelets? Small blood clots, something else is happening there. And again, as I pointed out, if a vaccine works, what's the point of a vaccine? The vaccine is simply there to train your immune system in theory. So why wouldn't you look to see if the training is working? Well, I look at this story coming out of NPR. Fisher-Price ignored a safety warning even after infants started dying. What should we do with these people? What should we do with government bureaucracies and agencies like the FDA, like the CDC, who allow companies, corporations, to completely ignore safety warnings even after people have died from their product, an experimental injection? What should we do about those people? What should we do about those corporations and the government that partners with them and the presidents who fund them with our money and tell them to skip the testing like Trump did? What should we do with those people? They are outraged that executives at Fisher-Price ignored repeatedly safety warnings about the company's once popular rock-and-play sleeper, even after infants began to roll over and die in the now-recalled product. Representative Carolyn Maloney, Democrat, New York, says, what we found is absolutely shocking. It is a national scandal. Well, it is. It is wrong when companies put profits before safety. And it is wrong when we have agencies that do nothing about it. The company told the Consumer Product Safety Commission that it knew of 14 infant deaths in the sleeper as of February 2018, more than a year before they recalled it. And they had put out about 4.7 million units that had been sold. Fisher-Price earned at least $200 million in revenue from a decade's worth of sales of the sleeper. That is chump change compared to the pharmaceutical companies. Not only did Trump give them, right up front, the very first one was $20 billion, they continued to give them more and more subsidies. They financed new factories for them to make these. I don't know what the total is, but when you roll everything together, a lot of people put it up to $60 billion that they gave to them subsidies. And then are buying their product and protecting them from all legal liability and even delivering their product with the military. And you've created 9 new billionaires. Maybe we should call them the Nazgul. 9 new billionaires, 2 of them, all in the pharmaceutical industry, 2 of them went from nothing to $4 billion in net worth. What do you say about that? I mean, over a decade, these people who were putting out this unsafe crib, they only made $200 million a company did over 10 years. These people made so much money that just one executive and 2 of the companies, each executive got $4 billion. Well, we know, and I pointed this out last week, and let me just repeat this very quickly for those of you who didn't hear it. We know what the delivery mechanism is because we've had a professor at Goethe University in Frankfurt look at this and report on this in the paper. We've also had a Japanese report of a leaked Pfizer report showing what this is doing. As a German scientist said, He said the vaccines send the DNA gene sequence of the spike protein into the cell nucleus. We've been told, oh, no, it's just on the surface. No, into the cell nucleus, rather than to the cytosol fluid found inside the cell where the virus normally would produce proteins. Once inside the cell nucleus, certain parts of the spike protein DNA are spliced or split apart, creating mutant versions, which are unable to bind to the cell membrane where important immunization takes place. These now floating mutant proteins, again, we were told, well, they don't go into the DNA, and they're not going to be free and floating around. They're going to be attached to a cell. And I said, well, okay, even if they're attached, they can still do damage, right? But no. They're free and floating around. They're secreted by cells into the body, triggering blood clots in roughly one out of every 100,000 people, not one in a million, as they tried to tell us. The jabs developed by Pfizer and Moderna deliver the spike's genetic material, they said, to the cell fluid, and it never enters the nucleus. Oh, really? Well, frankly, we don't believe that, because, as we saw back in March, Pfizer's vaccine was linked to more blood clots than AstraZeneca. That's right. So it's not just the Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccines, but it's also Pfizer and Moderna. Vaccine researcher pointed this out, Canadian vaccine researcher. He says, this is the first time that scientists have been privy to seeing where these messenger RNA, the mRNA vaccines, go after vaccination. Is it a safe assumption that it stays in the shoulder muscle where we shoot people in the shoulder? No. He said, absolutely not. And it's now very disconcerting. Vaccine researchers had assumed that the novel mRNA injections would behave like traditional vaccines and the vaccine spike protein, responsible for infection, and the most severe symptoms would remain mostly in the vaccination site at the shoulder muscle. But instead, Japanese data shows that the infamous spike protein of the coronavirus gets into the blood where it circulates for several days post-vaccination, then accumulates in organs, tissues, including spleen, bone marrow, liver, adrenal glands, and, quote, quite high concentrations in ovaries. We've known for a long time that the spike protein is a pathogenic protein. It is a toxin. It can cause damage in your body if it gets into circulation. A large number of studies have shown that the most severe effects of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, they say, such as blood clotting and bleeding, are due to the effects of the spike protein of the virus itself. So we inject people with that. We inject them with the genetic code to create that. When does it start? When does it end? They said lab animals injected with a purified spike protein developed cardiovascular problems. The spike protein was demonstrated to cross the blood-brain barrier and cause damage to the brain. That's why you're seeing brain tumors, you're seeing brain aneurysms. Gets into blood circulation. They said a recent study detected this spike protein in the blood plasma of 11 of 13 young healthcare workers who had had the Moderna shot. Pfizer, Moderna, doesn't matter, AstraZeneca, Johnson & Johnson. The spike protein was detected an average of 15 days after the first injection. You had a spike protein detectable on day 29 in one individual. You see, the difference between these is simply the delivery mechanism. They piggybacked the genetic sequence on the adenovirus with the AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson vaccines. With the others, they inject it encapsulated in PEG. Plastic, if you will. Once in circulation, the spike protein can attach to specific ACE2 receptors on blood platelets and the cells that line blood vessels. When that happens, it can do one of two things. It can either cause platelets to clump, and that can lead to clotting, or it can lead to bleeding. And by the way, this is a vaccine researcher who is, I'm reading what he says in his analysis and what came out of a leaked Pfizer study that was analyzed in Japan. So it can also lead to bleeding. So it can lead to clotting. It can lead to bleeding. It says the leaked Pfizer study tracing the biodistribution of the vaccine mRNA has terrifying implications, said a senior research scientist at MIT. She said, Stephanie Seneff said, it is now clear that vaccine content is being delivered to the spleen and to the glands, including the ovaries and adrenal glands. The released spike protein is being shed into the medium and then eventually reaches the bloodstream, causing systemic damage. The CDC recently announced these reports of heart conditions, of course. 18 teenagers in the state of Connecticut alone were hospitalized for heart problems. When you see it from AP, they say, well, it's 6 or 7 nationwide. No, just in Connecticut alone, 18 people. Brittle, the vaccine scientist who's looking at this, said the discovery of the vaccine-induced spike protein in blood circulation would have implications for blood donation programs. Think about this. You might want to set aside blood if you're going in for an operation, you or your family. We don't want to transfer these pathogenic spike proteins to fragile patients who are being transfused with that blood. Furthermore, any proteins in the blood will get concentrated into breast milk. And they found evidence of suckling infants experiencing bleeding disorders in their gastrointestinal tract. This has been reported to the CDC's VAERS system. In one VAERS report, a 5-month-old breastfed infant whose mother received a second dose of the Pfizer vaccine in March, the following day, the baby developed a rash, became inconsolable, refused to nurse, and developed a fever. The report says the baby was hospitalized with a diagnosis of a rare blood disorder in which blood clots form in the small blood vessels throughout the body. The baby died. Pfizer did not respond to questions about how long the company was aware of its research data that the Japanese agency had released. So if it is a crib that falls over and kills a baby, 14 of them over 10 years, oh, we're going to come after these people. But if you have more people who have died from these experimental vaccines in the last 5 months, more people have died than in the previous 23 years combined from vaccines, we will do nothing. We will do nothing except subsidize them. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, and joining us now is Alex Lazarev, and sometimes he goes by Sasha. And just to refresh your memory, because it's been a few weeks now, I want to play a little bit for you of the video that he did, and then we'll talk to Alex. This is him trying to illustrate with humor, absurdity, and sarcasm how absurd this whole lockdown experience is. And you have a guy who gets very upset and physically attacks the car with his bicycle. Let's roll that clip, Travis.
Fly with a narrative. Don't worry. Don't think for yourselves. Just 100% trust what you're being told. Do not hug anyone. Do not love anyone. Isolate yourselves. Wear your masks. Social distance. Just trust the narrative. You've never been lied to about anything. The government loves you. Trust the media. You're all doing a great job. Keep wearing those masks, guys. Keep wearing those masks. You two are a little bit too close together. Sorry, can you guys social distance? You in the orange? Come on, you're right next to all these people over here. Come on, think of your grandparents. This is crazy. But other than that, you're all doing a great job. Trust in the narrative. Do what the news tells you. Do what the government tells you. You're all doing a great job. Congratulations. We love you. Congratulations for following the narrative and trusting the news and not questioning anything. You're all doing a great job complying with the narrative. There is definitely not a psychological operation happening when you're convinced of a reality that's based on fear that has nothing to do with what's actually happening.
You! You!
That guy's not wearing a mask either. So he runs up and starts hitting him with a...
With,
for those listening on the podcast, he's hitting the car now with a...
You're insane, bro.
With a bicycle. So he rolls up the window. Now, here it comes.
Dude, you're insane.
Get the f*** out of here, man.
I'm going to kick you in the f***ing head. We're trying to wake people up because you've been psyoped. We love you, people. But you've been psychologically... You're literally been psyoped.
Wow. Just broke the entire car window.
Okay, are you happy now? Are you happy now? You f***ing trying to wake you people up over here. You've been psyoped, brother. You've been psyoped. That's what a psychological operation is. Yeah, you want
to... Okay, let's go to Alex. That was truly amazing. And I think there's a lot that we can learn from this experience. But let's bring in Alex Lazaroff from Toronto, Canada. You're still in Toronto, right, Alex?
No. I'm actually living in Vancouver.
Oh, okay. All right. Now in Vancouver, formerly from Toronto. I thought that was perfect. And, of course, you're doing other things as well. You have your COVID zombie kind of protests. But it's a way of just making fun of this whole thing. And I think that's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't laugh now, David, when can you laugh?
That's right. Yeah, well, you know, really, it is devastating to them. This guy had no response to this. And, of course, this is one of Saul Alinsky's rules for radicals, that ridicule is the most effective weapon because there is no response to it except to pick up your bicycle and smash somebody's window. I think you had him completely flummoxed and frustrated.
Well, I think his own... life situation and level of consciousness and coping mechanisms had him frustrated. I just came along, was having a good time, doing my bit to try and give people a chance of maybe waking up a little bit or analyzing the situation or something. And he went full nutso. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about how you kind of got into this a few years ago. You started something a few years ago called comedy therapy. Tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, sure. Well, it's been a big adventure for me. So, yeah, I started doing comedy as a youth, mainly as a way to cope with, I had a very traumatic childhood. You know, I didn't have a father figure. Mother ran away. And, I just had a big adventure in life. And for many years was a dating coach for men as a way for me to connect with the feminine. And, you know, it was just a big thing for me being able to connect with other people. And after many years on the healing journey and a spiritual path, I started randomly started this course where I help people connect with their own trauma and their own personal story, like looking at the difficult things that have happened or the messed up stuff that's happened in your life and seeing the humor in it. So that if you can laugh at your own trauma, if your own story and see the funny and connect with other people as a human being, as you know, because we're all imperfect. We've all got a story. We've all got trauma. So if you
That's right.
Joke around about your own stuff and connect with somebody on that level, it's very, very profound, very healing. And it allows you to truly be who you are without trying to hide who you are. You see what I'm saying? And so, and this is what's missing in our society so much, is that authentic connection. You know, it's just so fake out there. So that's just one of the things that I do in this world. Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, all that started before we had the over-the-top effort to shut down any comedy. I said earlier in the program, you've got people like John Cleese and Rowan Atkinson in the UK. They're very concerned because they're ahead of us in terms of shutting down any humor. This is always, shutting down humor has always been the hallmark of a totalitarian society. It kind of surprised me that somebody as perceptive as John Cleese didn't really realize that. He said, well, we were just trying to be nice to people, and now we can't make any jokes about anything. And they're upfront about the fact that they don't want you making any jokes about anything. So I don't know if it was a guy who was angry about the fact that you were pointing out that they were being fooled in a psyop, or if he just hated humor in general. Because that's what we are. We're developing totalitarian societies in the West, and I think the best indication of that is that nobody can laugh at themselves or anything now.
It is surreal, David, that, you know, I've been doing sometimes these, I do comedy at protests, but I also do underground comedy shows. And to think, like, if you told me 5 years ago, I'd be doing secret underground comedy clubs in Canada, you know what I'm saying? Like, and it's hilarious because we gather like, all right, you know, welcome to the world's first comedy club for unbrainwashed, unvaccinated, you know, freedom fighters, you know, it's just hilarious. And, It's really a good time. And actually, in Canada, we've gone further than no jokes. In Canada, we're straight up following the minority port. the movie Minority Report. We are arresting people now for pre-crime. I don't know if you heard, they actually arrested five people and put them in jail in one of our provinces here in Manitoba because they were thinking about, David, they were thinking about organizing a freedom protest. So they lost. I mean, I'm serious. You see it in the movies. You're like, that's a movie with Tom Cruise. That could never happen. Happening now.
Yeah, a protest is a crime, and even thinking about freedom is a crime, isn't it? That's where we are today. Yeah, I do that frequently. Shocking. I used to have people get really angry with me and say, why are you laughing about it? Because sometimes I go through a really dark stuff and report it, and at the end of it, I would just laugh. It's like, this is just so over-the-top absurd. Yeah, it's very dark. It's very criminal. It's very dangerous what they're doing. But it's so absurd, sometimes you just got to laugh. And that's really kind of, a healthy way to try to deal with some of this stuff. You understand its absurdity, and you laugh at them. I think that's very important to be able to do that.
You have to, David. And, a minute ago, you were talking about the vaccines and how, they can attack your spleen and bone marrow. And you know what? Let's be honest, David. Spleen and bone marrow, they're overrated. I mean, when's the last time you even were aware of your spleen or used your spleen?
That's right. Last time I ever heard about the spleen was...
What are you causing drama for here, bro?
That's right. Last time I ever heard about it was with a Weird Al video. I mean, obviously it's not important.
it's not important, but David. I love how they talk about people who have questions about vaccines. I love how the term that they throw around, vaccine hesitancy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like that's a very mild term for people that are 1,000% completely against something. I guess I don't have a problem with government, David. I'm just experiencing a bit of government hesitancy. That's my problem. We're going to have to get me some treatment for my government hesitancy, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, they put that out, and they actually abbreviate it now, Alex. They've got it VH. And so I said, oh, yeah, I'm VH positive, and I'm trying to spread it to everybody. So it's a disease. It's called thinking.
Exactly. And I do this, and I have so many jokes about this in my act because now people are so crazy. For me, it's just entertainment. I'm even past that point now of like going out there and trying to wake people up. I'm just entertaining myself, and in me having a great time, hopefully people will laugh and realize how absurd it is. When people ask me why I'm not wearing a mask now, David, I just look at them. I keep a straight face, and I just say, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I just blink. Sometimes I go with, like you said, I've got a condition that prevents me from wearing a mask. It's called thinking for myself. And sometimes, David, I shorten it and I just say, actually, I'm very kinky. I like to practice unprotected breath.
So full facial nudity.
Yeah, I'm a facial nudist. I just entertain myself, and it's and that's it.
A facial nudist. Yeah, you went out without wearing your Fauci. That's what we say here. You don't have your Fauci on. They look at you like you've got your fly down, or they look at you like they think you don't have a fly, like they were saying about President Trump. I mean, they went off on that. You talk about conspiracy theories, they went off on the fact that they thought he had his pants on backwards. It's like, yeah, okay.
But David, it's crazy. People are literally afraid of other humans that are showing their face. I mean, it's a level of insanity. We couldn't, even though like we knew the agenda and we knew what they were doing, to get to this level of fear is just it's the first time in history you can tell somebody's level of indoctrination just by looking at their face, which in a way is convenient. But it's you know what I'm saying? They've got it up to the ears. Don't talk to this person at all. Up to the nose. Maybe they're just trying to get into the store and you have a chance. But it's for me, this really comes down to a spiritual war. And I think this is something that you've touched on. It's been going on for such a long time. But it's really a war of convincing us that we're separate beings to get us to live in fear, to get us to fight each other, when the ultimate spiritual truth, as all of the masters talk about, is that we're actually, our nature is love, that we're one infinite consciousness, that we're all literally the one being experiencing itself, right? And their agenda has always been, nope, be afraid, you gotta, someone's gonna hurt you, stay away, don't trust anyone. And now this is the ultimate scam. Anyone out there, even if they look healthy, they can kill you, they can get you sick. So you're literally in your basement wearing a mask in terror for the rest of your life. It's the ultimate separation scam. It's so obvious when you see it, but
yeah, that's right.
Unfortunately, people don't see it.
Not for a lot of people. Anyway. Not for a lot of people. It's been a very effective PSYOP. And when I look at this, and I've said many times, what they want you to do is to completely isolate from each other, to lose that link, that humanity that we all share. And that's something that has always been a part of the elitists, the people who are really rich, they really are concerned that everybody's going to get together and take their stuff, right? So they get very protective of their stuff. It's all about their money and keeping their money. And that means they got to keep you divided. And they've always done that. And it's very obvious when they try to divide people by groups, by skin color and these other things. But now they're trying to divide us from each other at the atomistic level, individual to individual, simply because the other person has got to be diseased. And if you don't have any contact with them, then presumably you're going to live forever. This is what they're doing to us. And they're really projecting their fear, their desire for isolation. They're projecting that onto us. They're using us as the ultimate divide and conquer, not just between groups, but between each and every individual. And so that's why we have to oppose this. And I think the way that we oppose it is just simply living our lives. You said that you're doing some underground comedy now, literally. Is that what's happening? Or are you at liberty to say that? You might get arrested for saying that.
I mean, I won't say too much, but yeah, there have been underground events happening. But the thing is, the magic about all this, this whole hoax, is that it's brought all of us together, all of us who are awake, who have love in our hearts, who see the agenda. You know, I have more friends now than I ever did in my life. I mean, it's unbelievable. But yeah, my revolution is to do the opposite of what they want us to do. They want us to live in fear and cower and you know, not live our lives. I choose to be the love as much as I can more. I help other people. I love other people. You know, I make shirts that say love is my new normal, and I give them away at my comedy gigs. You know, I just choose to be the love vibration and to spread, you know, as much positivity in this world as I can. And I refuse to change that. I refuse to live in fear. You know, I will continue to be myself and live my truth, no matter what these psychopaths try and pull off. And I think this will be their downfall. They're arrogant, and they I think they've underestimated us humans in our ability to overcome and heal and come together. And I think we're looking at the last part of this mind control, trauma based mind control system that we've all been under. I think it's falling apart right before our eyes, and I think we're entering the new world.
I think it's a good idea for us to discredit these people that we've been following, to point out that the emperor has no clothes. So I'm glad that Rand Paul is doing that. I'm still concerned that they're focusing too much on just the China aspect of that. We need to understand that we've got 200 of these labs here in the U.S., not all of them biosafety level 4, but we've got a lot. We've got hundreds of these things, each of them exposing us to that. But it is important to remove the mask off of this dictator. And I want to touch on something else that you wrote, if you don't mind. I'd like to. You wrote an op-ed piece about 11 years ago for The Guardian, about how you had $1 million inheritance and you blew it, and then you found true meaning in life after you got that money out of the way. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it was such a long time ago. I almost forgot. But yeah, if you look me up, it comes up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, that's just part.
You haven't been completely banned by Google like I have, so... So we can still find the stuff that you wrote 10 years ago. All my stuff has been memory hold, but I thought it was an amazing story. Tell the audience a little bit about what happened to your experience.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, when I was young, my family all comes from the Soviet Union, which is, you know, Russia and a whole bunch of other countries. So we actually escaped the Soviet Union for me to be born in free Ontario, Canada. And now I've escaped communist Ontario, Canada, so I could live a bit more free in British Columbia. And now if we lose this freedom battle in British Columbia, I'm moving to Florida. But anyway, that being an aside, I snuck one more joke in, David. I feel good about that. But it's funny because it's true. But so my mother had a lot of trauma from communism. And because I heard all the stories about communism from my grandmother and from my mother, I know what it is.
Yes.
And we don't want it. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. My whole family, my grandfather, he was in the war. But I've heard the stories of what happens under communism. You can't say what you want. You can't think what you want. And people, and if you say something that they don't like, they don't need an excuse for you to disappear. You just disappear.
That's right.
And so
yeah,
so
the social media and the canceling culture right now, that's just a temporary thing. They're going to make it literally, physically make you disappear. That's where this Marxism is headed. And the people who have lived under it can smell it a mile away, just like Artur Pulaski, who is in Poland. I mean, you know, those of you who have been under, and I had the same experience when I grew up in Florida. Alex, I had kids whose parents came over from Castro's communist Cuba, and they were very sensitive to all these issues as well. But go ahead, tell us. What happened next?
Yeah, yeah. It's no coincidence, David, that all of our freedom movement leaders here are all Eastern Europeans. Mm-hmm. In Canada. Yeah. Really, the ones going around freaking out right now are Canadians like me that have a background in, you know, other communist, ex-communist countries. But yeah, so back in the day, yeah, I was just doing my best to get through life. You know, I was that socially awkward kid and, you know, just doing what I could do. And then my stepfather died in a car accident when I was about 17. And then my mother took her own life when I was about 18 years old. And she was very squirrely. She was very talented. And she saved up all her money, but didn't spend any on me. So I was clueless that my mom had any money. It was like I had a paper route from like being 6 or 7 years old. I'm trying to make like $50 a month so I could, you know, buy me some decent shoes. Seriously, like I had nothing. Yeah. And so when my mom passed away and I opened up the envelope and I got like $500,000 in the bank account with my name on it and then other assets, yeah, totaling about $1 million. It was a bit of a, you know, it was a bit of a shocker, you know what I mean? So it was a complete shock. And I did what any 18-year-old who didn't love himself and hadn't found himself would do. I blew all the money like a fool. And of course, everybody wants to be your friend. And, you can imagine a young kid with this kind of money. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it took me about 6 years and I blew all the money. And, you know, there was sex, there was drugs, there was doing very stupid things and giving money away. But I had a great time. I learned a lot, but I, of course, blew all the money. And it was great. I wouldn't change the experience for anything. And I learned some very, very the million-dollar lesson was no amount of money can make you discover who you are or find happiness or find peace. You know, mm-hmm. That's a journey that us human beings have to take on our own. You know, that's right. That's about, you know, finding our own traumas and our own limiting beliefs and seeing them for what they are and healing them and letting them go and forgiving other people and forgiving ourselves for being all of us human beings, again, in this trauma-based mind control system. We're all traumatized, where we've all got fears, we've all got worries. It's about doing the inner work and finding your passion and doing what you love and adding your unique essence, using your unique gifts in this life to do what you came here to do. And no amount of money can, you know, it's nice to have money. I'll take money over not having money, but chasing money and thinking that money is the solution to your problems, that's really another program, a very sneaky program by this matrix. It's just simply not true.
That's right.
It's just about, you know, but it's about being you.
That's right. And I think, you know, as we look, I think, Christian understanding is that the love of money is the root of all evil. I mean, when we look at these globalist plans, these people are, again, as I point out, trying to hoard all the money they can. They're trying to protect their stash from everybody else. And maybe that means that they've got to somehow incarcerate us or control us or harm us or reduce our numbers, all that type of thing, that insecurity, that fear, they're projecting onto us now through this lockdown. You look at the people that are pushing this on us, demanding that we own nothing, that we have, that we can't eat meat, that we can't travel, and so forth. These are the wealthiest people the world has ever seen. And so it actually is a pathological thing to love money. Money, as you point out, is not a bad thing in and of itself, but it is something that we all have to be very, very careful with. It's like dynamite. I look at these lottery winners, Alex, because, you know, now I don't know. I don't guess they're doing that in Canada. I haven't seen that. But, you know, in America, they make this whole thing a game show now. We're in the game show stage. And so if you get a vaccine, you might win $1 million. Or you might go the other way. You might wind up with $1 million in medical bills and a permanent disability. But, you know, hey, are you feeling lucky? And that's where we are today. And a lot of people think that having $1 million is really going to solve their life, but they don't all the problems in their life. But they don't realize, just as you typically see with these lottery winners, they typically, once they come into a lot of money, they just run through it, as you experienced.
You know, it's funny, David, when I was younger, you know, and didn't know as much, you know, I would make fun of you Americans, you know, and oh, those Americans are crazy. They're running around shooting everybody with all them guns. And oh, we're so peaceful up here in Canada. We don't have any guns. And then you get a little bit older and wiser and you see that, you know, the government's been taken over and it's trying to oppress and kill everybody. And suddenly 20 years later, I'm going, you know, those Americans, They might have been right about them guns. You know, I'm calling my American friends, bro. I'm sorry about all the jokes I made about you, crazy American loving guy. I love you. Buy me a shotgun. I might see you in Florida in 6 months, okay, if we lose this thing. So I've changed my tune, David. I've changed my tune after all these years.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, you look at what's happening in Hong Kong. You know, before they were able to completely shut down all the different protests, a lot of the signs they were saying, we need a Second Amendment here. Because it isn't necessarily, you know, what you see is when you see the drive-by shootings, that's the war on drugs. What you don't see is the deterrence effect, right? The whole point of having an armed citizenry is the whole point that, you know, you have a deterrence to the government wanting to do something. And we see that over and over again. Sometimes, as I pointed out earlier, Alex, it can just be the massive numbers of people in a church, where in Baltimore, the cops showed up in big numbers, but not enough numbers that they wanted to get into a tussle with people, even though they would perhaps expect that the church members weren't going to fight them, but they still had hundreds of people, and if somebody got into a tussle with them, they didn't want to irritate people when they're outnumbered by hundreds of people. So that is just having that number of people, but also having people who have guns. That's a deterrent, just as the sheer number of people was a deterrent to the police getting violent there at that particular church. But yeah, I don't know where we go from this. Are you seeing, is your area now where you are, is that in lockdown as we're seeing other parts of Canada going back into lockdown?
So we're actually here in BC, we're actually the last semi-free province in Canada. So we're actually exiting lockdown. So it's now you're allowed to have like people come into your restaurant, even wowzers. And so we're actually opening up here. So we're hoping if they don't try anything funny and we open up the rest of rest of Canada, we'll see that British Columbia is open and okay. And you know, pretty weird, David, huh? That this coronavirus doesn't seem to like Florida or Texas very much. It's very picky. Doesn't like these big states, but loves Canadians. Those Canadians are just so delicious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Loves coming up here. Or maybe it's allergic to guns. Maybe guns make coronavirus nervous, David. I don't know. It seems very finicky, very picky, this virus. I don't know if I'd want to be friends with it, David, because it's so picky. You know?
Well, you wouldn't want to be friends with it because it's so discriminating, and that's such a
very
bad thing, right?
Yeah, it would be bad for my reputation to be friends with such a discriminating virus. You know.
That's right. Well, it's great talking. Tell people where they can find your work. You're on YouTube, right, or Instagram. Where are you?
Yeah, so I'm all over the place. So for me, just sharing my thoughts and doing some funny jokes and funny videos, I'm Alex the Comic on Instagram. And then I've got a spiritual podcast just about loving and accepting myself and you know, the spiritual journey of discovering ourselves, self-realization. So I started that over 5 years ago, and it's the woke. I don't know if you can. Can I swear on your show, or there's no swearing?
Well, keep it mild.
That's very well. I'll tell people the URL. I don't have to use the big. So it's the woke. The URL is www.woke.as, and it's the woke AF podcast. And then of course the woke term got taken over by certain members of our society. So now I might have to rename my podcast. But yeah, woke.as, and it's a great show. And again, I do live streams and have guests. And stuff.
Well, they always do that. They always take over the words. We'd say people were awake, because I understood what the agenda was, and so then they started to call themselves woke, so now I call them Ewoks. Yeah. I just moved the E to the front, because they're kind of like little puppets.
Well, that's funny. That's actually, that's good. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, and your stuff is very funny, very good. I love the way that you ridicule this tyranny, because that's, again, the one thing they can't stand, and that was what was so evident about that guy. He had no way to combat it. Because you were just pointing it out and doing it humorously. And I love what you did with the zombies in the square as well. So thank you so much for joining us. And it's great talking to you, Alex. Alex Lazarev. And give him the name of time one more time, the Instagram.
So Alex the Comic? Alex the Comic on Instagram, yeah.
All right, great, great. Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure, my friend. God bless you. Thank you.
Thank you. Alex Lazarev. Thank you very much, Alex. All right, we're going to be right back. Stay with us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, and thank you. And just to remind people who maybe have not heard the show on a daily basis, we were kicked off of PayPal as well as Venmo 2 weeks ago, was it? I don't know. I guess at least 2 weeks ago. And so we do have some other venues there. We're also exploring some other ways to go. But Subscribestar, I know some people have had problems with Subscribestar, but we do have others who've been able to get through. We have the P.O. Box there at thedavidknightshow.com. Again, that's where you'll find all the links to the live stream as well as to the video channels that we have. And sometimes our video channels, we are not able to get the name David Knight Show. It's being camped out on by the people at InfoWars and some of the platforms. So go there to find the different links to the various places. Rumble in particular. And on Rumble, we had to put up Roundtable Report. So you'll find the links to the video channels. You'll find the links to the podcasts. And there's a lot of different podcasts that have the real David Knight Show. And then we were able to get back David Knight Show. And so that is going out from those two platforms to a lot of different podcast platforms, iTunes, iHeart, Spotify, those types of things. So you can subscribe there, or you can go directly to the source at Podbean or Stitcher. And finally, we also have links to where, as I point out, you can support us. Speaking of money, we have the feds claimed yesterday evening that they had seized the ransom money, the ransomware payment from Colonial Pipeline. It was $4.4 million. And the way that Politico describes it, the headline is, U.S. seizes most of Colonial Pipeline's $4.4 million ransom payment. Whereas when you look at the RT headline, it says the U.S. says it seized, the U.S. says that it seized $2.3 million. Oh, big difference. So one of them, it looks like, they got it all back, right, from Politico. Cheer the government. Yay. RT is a little bit more skeptical. That's why I like RT. They'll lie to you about Putin. They'll lie to you about what's going on in Russia, but they'll tell you the truth about what's going on in America, believe me, unlike Politico and CNN and other places like that. So as RT says, the U.S. says that it seized $2.3 million, which would be about 52%. Because when you look at Politico, and again, I think this is humorous, the way they spin the news. U.S. seizes most of the money. Then you go down and they talk about it. So, well, they recovered more than half. 52% to be precise. By tracing the payment across the ostensibly anonymous cryptocurrency ecosystem, the government was able to locate and seize $2.27 million from the virtual currency account used by the hackers. And as I was speaking in New York, I had somebody who talked to me. I had interviewed years ago, I interviewed John McAfee, and he was talking about Monero. And I met someone who has a crypto coin, and I've got the information. I brought it back with me, but I haven't contacted him yet. I'd like to contact him and talk to him, because he's got some, I think it's called Pirate or something. And that crypto, he said, like Monero, and those are the only two that he was aware of that would make all the transactions anonymous. You understand that with Bitcoin, all the cryptocurrencies, the blockchain is a chain of possession. It can be walked back. And so it's not really anonymous. That's why they said they were able to recover this. Interestingly, though, they have only recovered 52% of it, because you can do things like you can put it in a tumbler and you can try to anonymize it and break it down. So the Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco, said it was the first seizure of this kind ever. FBI Director, Deputy Director Paul Abate described DarkSide, the people who said they were doing the ransomware, that was the name they operated under. He described them as, quote, a Russian-based cybercrime group. And RT points out, offering no evidence for the claim. I don't know where they're coming from. But all of this stuff, when they try to make this about Russia or make the virus about China, understand they've got another agenda. They're pushing, at the very least, they're pushing money for the military-industrial complex, and they may be pushing a war. So always take this stuff with a grain of salt, especially when we're talking about cybercrime and we're talking about hacking and that sort of thing, as we've seen before, because Julian Assange releasing the information about Vault 7, the program that was created by the CIA to make it look as though they were a different group, right? To make it look as though they were Russia or China or North Korea or fill in the blank, anybody that they want to set up. So they have software that does that. The interesting thing is that that software was stolen from the CIA. Nothing is secure on the internet. Their hacking software was stolen. The CIA and the NSA's hacking software was stolen and exposed on the internet. That's why they're trying to kill Julian Assange and others. And Assange, they just published the manual about how the thing works so you could see it. Later on, some other people published the code, and then eventually WikiLeaks did publish the code. But it was really more about just, this is what your government is capable of, so you don't fall into the trap that's being laid out there by the FBI deputy director. The cybersecurity company Elliptic announced May 17th that it had tracked down 47 distinct cryptocurrency wallets used by DarkSide, which had processed at least $90 million worth of Bitcoin before they were suddenly closed under pressure from U.S. authorities. This is what they're trying to do, though. They're trying to make this about Bitcoin because that is part of the agenda. Biden would like to get rid of Bitcoin. Interestingly enough, Zero Hedge had a posting of crypto crashing yesterday, and they said crypto just crashed as the Department of Justice dumping their recovered ransoms. And they said as of 5:25 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, they said after leaking lower all day following scam comments from former President Trump and the Department of Justice press conference on ransomware, cryptos just puked hard after the cash equity close with no obvious headline or technical level as a catalyst. So their question was, well, is the Department of Justice dumping some of these coins? We don't know. My question is, if they were dumping the coins, do they not give back the ransom to Colonial Pipeline? Probably not. You know, we don't have that principle established in our law. That was part of the barbaric Mosaic law that so many people like to characterize as barbaric. And yet, it was the criminal code that allowed a little bit of tempering, right? The eye for the eye, tooth for a tooth, that was actually restraining people who would just typically go out and kill somebody for an offense. So it was trying to put some proportionality in there, trying to make a distinction between accidental and premeditated murder. But the key thing that is missing out of our legal system that was in the Mosaic Law was the idea of restitution of stolen goods and things like that, or payment, rather than putting people in a box in a jail cell. These people would make restitution over a period of time, if necessary, to the people whose property they had destroyed or damaged, or if it was an inadvertent accidental death, but due to negligence, they would make compensation to the family over a period of time. That's not in our legal system. I mean, you have civil lawsuits that you can file, but if it is a criminal action, there is no compensation. You might go to jail. You might have a fine that goes to the government, but not to the victims. And so maybe that's the case. Maybe the Department of Justice recovered that 52% of the ransomware and they're keeping it. Maybe they dumped it in the market because they want to make cryptos look bad. They don't just want to make cryptos look bad. The police are now calling for new powers to freeze crypto assets in the UK, even as Biden has put a big bullseye on Bitcoin as well. The London Metropolitan Police, their headquarters at Scotland Yard, want the ability to freeze criminals' crypto assets in the same way they can do that with bank funds. And so they want complete transparency, complete control over the cryptocurrencies. We align cryptocurrency to the same kind of approach that we have about cash-based criminality. So again, they're trying to put a criminal spin on Bitcoin, just like they have on the dark web. The dark web, not necessarily being any more criminal than the regular web, where all kinds of criminal activity happens all the time, including kiddie porn and everything else that you can imagine. Yes, that happens on the dark web, but it also happens on the other internet. It's just that it is not as visible to the authorities on the dark web, and Bitcoin is not as accessible or visible to them, and so they want to stop that. Ron Paul says Bitcoin must be taken seriously in the age of free money. What does he mean by free money? He means Federal Reserve money. Free money that is circulating these days, says Ron Paul, and it's all fake, and it's all political corruption. Free money means that they either print it or they steal it. That's right. And, of course, they can steal it by inflation. So I guess the question then is the IRS the original ransomware? It's a little bit different because the IRS takes your money if you don't give it to them, whereas these people take your money to leave you alone. They come after you. Ron Paul said, I have a solution. He said, one of my solutions for foreign policy was when we were in places that we shouldn't be in. I said, well, we marched in, let's march out. And that's what we should do with the Federal Reserve, too. We don't need the Federal Reserve. It's built with corruption. So what we need to do is to get rid of it. He said Bitcoin needs to be considered seriously, given the current state of the economy and the Fed's monetary policy. He talked about Biden's $6 trillion budget proposal, the biggest federal spending since World War II. But, of course, remember, we had President Trump in just the very first round of this pandemic modern monetary theory, or the magic money tree from the pandemic. He put out $3.7 trillion. That was a bipartisan agreement. About the only person who opposed it was Thomas Massie. Trump was furious with him, said, we're going to get rid of this guy. We're going to primary him out. Hell hath no fury like Trump did when his nearly $4 trillion bill was opposed by somebody who was a real fiscal conservative, who said there's no governmental authority for this. There's no pragmatic reason for this. It's going to destroy our economy and our currency. So Trump wanted to get him. But now we can talk about deficits, because now they're Biden's deficits. Ron Paul said government spending is going to work well for Bitcoin. Bitcoin better be considered seriously. Speaking of Trump and speaking of Biden, of course, you know, Biden wants to get rid of Bitcoin. Trump didn't like it either. Yesterday he called Bitcoin a scam. Isn't this like the pot calling the kettle black? He says, Bitcoin, it just seems like a scam. I don't know, because it's another currency competing against the dollar. I'm not a fan of Bitcoin, he said. Not a fan. And other cryptocurrencies, which are not money, and whose value is highly volatile and based on thin air. Well, that's kind of interesting. He said that back in 2019, July. He said, we only have one real currency in the USA, and it's stronger than ever. Oh, really? Really? Well, you know, President Trump, I'm not a fan of the Federal Reserve. They have created money. You know, he says, well, Bitcoin is volatile and based on thin air. Federal Reserve creates money out of thin air, doesn't it, President Trump? That's a big problem. Big problem with that. And speaking of volatility, I don't know anybody who is more volatile in their positions, because he doesn't have any principles. He's a true politician. Politicians don't have principles. They have positions. And the worst of them, like President Trump, are volatile in their positions, and they're constantly changing it, being blown about by thin air. So, when we look at what is happening, I think President Trump looks like more of a scam than Bitcoin, frankly. I remember when it was just a year ago, you had Trump make the move to change a little bit of the nature of the Department of Justice and Federal Reserve. Do you remember that? Do you remember the QAnon people? Do you remember the 4D chess people like Alex saying, well, that's it. See, Trump, we're winning. He's taking over the Federal Reserve. He's putting them under the Department of Justice. I pushed back against that. I didn't call out Alex directly on that, but I resisted that quite a bit. And to put the final nails in the coffin, I got Catherine Austin Fitz on, and she explained that they're two sides of the same coin. Nothing changed. But Alex ran that through for several news cycles that Trump had taken over the Federal Reserve, and because of that, Trump's life was in danger. He was about to be assassinated. Absolute nonsense. Well, that's where we are with the Bitcoin movement. And again, when you look at what is happening, understand that a false flag can be a situation where the government actually does something and blames it on other people, or it can be when somebody does something on their own, commits a crime, and the government spends it to their agenda. And that is exactly what is being done, whether they are, whoever's behind these ransomware attacks, whoever's behind these attacks on Bitcoin, it is being used by them to spin the agenda that we need to have more centralized federal control or global control by government, global governance, control over our currency, over every aspect of our lives, including the internet. They will always take these crises and use them. And that's not just the Democrats, it's the Republicans as well. So keep that in mind, and we will be starting up the program on KHNC 5 minutes after the hour. You can find that at 1360KHNC.com. Thank you for listening. And we really do appreciate and do need your support. Here's how you can support us.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via PayPal, or donate via Venmo, Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.